I think also at the core of all of that is the product, which has like from the beginning been the main focus of the company and still is. Like if you don't have a good product, it doesn't matter what you do with UA. But if you have a good product, you can just drop people in there and they will have a good experience. They will, as you said, like they will keep inviting other people. They will keep coming back. So that's something that like you can't do without. You can add as many layers as you want on top, but you have to have a good product.
Welcome to Mobile Growth and Pancakes, a podcast by Stormhaven. We break down how and why mobile apps grow. In each episode, we invite a mobile growth expert onto the show to break down a specific mobile growth strategy, how it worked, why it worked, and what they would do differently. I'm your host, Esther Schatz.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Mobile Growth and Pancakes. I'm your host, Jonathan Fishman. I'm VP Marketing here at Stormhaven. And today, I'm really excited to be here today with Vera from Wolt. Hey, Vera.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Do you want to tell us a bit about your role at Wolt and what are you responsible for?
Yes. So I've been at Wolt now for 3 years. I'm currently working as a user acquisition lead. So I lead a team of UA campaign managers, taking care of our online growth in the different markets that we are in. And also I'm responsible for ASO. So also have some team members working with that as well.
Awesome. And I just have to say congrats because Wolt just got acquired. It was announced, I think, 2 weeks ago, which is pretty amazing. And you had the front row seat to see this kind of growth. Today we're at like 23 countries, is that right?
Yes, we are now in 23 countries, mostly like Europe and Middle Asia and then Japan. So definitely has been great to see that. I think when I started, we were in like 10, 12 markets, something like that. So definitely like we've seen a lot of country launches since then and Japan and Germany also being one of those. So yeah, definitely nice to see us being appreciated also elsewhere and that we built this great company.
For sure. I remember when you entered Tel Aviv, which was the best thing that happened to me taste-wise, but the worst thing that happened to my wallet.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in there would say the same, at least based on what I hear.
I order way too much Wolt, like all of us at the Stormhaven team. But it's amazing. Like you took Tel Aviv by storm. I remember when Wolt entered, like I had I was from the other side, like I was the consumer. Seeing Wolt enters a new city, and it was like in a matter of weeks, it was like everybody knew what Wolt is and downloaded the app, which was insane. So I'm really excited to talk a bit today about what you guys are doing and what's your methodology when entering a new country and how really you tailor the marketing message in terms of the UA creatives and the product pages in the App Store and Google Play. To the local market. But before that, I just want to start with something I chat about a lot with folks recently, which is changes with the ID fade deprecation, everything that happened after iOS 14.5. So just in general, like what type of challenges or what are you guys seeing with regarding that?
Yeah, well, I think the challenges are probably the same as everyone else. Not knowing who is who. And as a company, we also decided not to ask for the IDFA content at all. So basically, that means that we, like after iOS 14, we lose all the user level tracking. So of course, that's a big challenge. We've been now, since it happened, building our own probabilistic modeling to kind of try to cover for the loss in the data. We use the like, well, basically any data source that we have, mainly scan data for like feeding that model, and then based on the what we know about the user behavior and so on, we try to do our own attribution to be able to kind of optimize on a campaign level for iOS.
Cool, and that's something that you've built in-house, this model? Yeah.
Yes, so we have our own own team, marketing tech team who's behind this. So they've been working a lot on it, and of course still we keep improving it. And I think something that has also affected us, like in addition to the iOS that we've had to also build into the model, is the deprecation of view through attribution from several channels now, I think Facebook, TikTok. Mm-hmm. So that's also then something that now we're trying to incorporate into the, well, not exactly the same modeling because the data source is different, but kind of building overall modeling to try to cover as much as possible of these different reasons why we lose user level data.
Got it. And in terms of the SK ad network, like just what went behind the decision of, first of all, not asking for, like not using the ATT framework, not asking for users to track them? And are you using SK ad network? Is it one of the signals that your model gets?
Yes. So we are using SK ad network. We build our own logic to it to try to still get as much funnel data as possible. And then the reason why we decided not to ask for the consent, it was kind of a discussion between us and then product trying to weigh in on the kind of what do we see as like what's the probable opt-in percentage, how much does it affect the user experience, because that's still our main kind of main thing that we compete with, is the user experience and the app. And how it is. So how much does it then kind of interrupt that experience if there's a lot of pop-ups coming up, and kind of trying to weigh all of these different viewpoints. And then in the end, this is what we decided to do.
Got it. Yeah, I see you're not alone in that decision. I see this with a lot of teams. Basically, in order for the ATT framework to be even remotely effective, a user needs to provide consent twice, once your app and once to the app where they saw the ad for that to work. The percentage is there. Like if you multiply the two percentages, it comes to like a very low number, like less than 5% from what I saw. So the value there can't be big because that segment of users do not represent all of your audience. So making decisions based on that is really tough. So how are you making decisions to like budget allocation decisions these days, all based on your internal model? Like it's on the probabilistic model?
Yes. So now we are starting to get to a point with the model that we can start also making decisions based on that. However, we also look at, for example, blended numbers on a higher level to make sure that we have incrementality for our investment. So I think that's probably something that we will keep looking at for a longer period of time, just to make sure. But then, like as I said, on a campaign level or more like a granular level, when doing optimization, it's kind of the only way for us to go with. So we have to trust what we get from Scan and what we model out of that.
Got it. And that's on the measurement side. On the targeting side, you see, I mean, did your channels change? On like what type of like basically, Walt is targeting a very broad audience. Is that right? Like, or is it more narrow?
In a way, yes, very broad. But then again, in a way, it's quite limited because we are limited by our delivery area. So in a lot of markets, we are not in the whole market. We are only in specific cities, and even inside the city, we could only cover a certain area. So we have like a lot of restrictions in terms of the geolocation targeting. Which we want to keep, of course, because a user cannot make their first order if they are not in the delivery area. So it doesn't make sense to target outside of that. But then, like with that, of course, comes like already a little bit smaller audience. So the more you start to split it into pieces after that, then the higher the CPMs, like you start to see inflation quite fast. So of course we do testing also with further segmentation of audiences, but we quite heavily rely on the geo-targeting.
Got it. And you saw, like after June this year, did you see any impact on your targeting or your abilities to target or in different channels?
Not really in terms of UA. I mean, for UA, not that much. But then, of course, for retargeting, we cannot do that because we're not asking for the consent. So it means that we simply cannot target any iOS users based on user level data or share that data with third parties. So that's something that we are unable to do at the moment.
Yeah, got it. So and was that a big part of your UA, budget or efforts?
Not necessarily. I think the retargeting part is something that is growing over time. But since we are still growing really fast, so the main focus for us is still getting new users. Depending on the market, then some markets are more mature. Then of course we start to shift more focus into retargeting and how to activate the existing user base we have.
Cool. So let's move a bit into localization, which is something that I know as somebody that is responsible for UA and ASO, it's something that you put a lot of effort into. Can you walk me through your process of how do you approach even entering a new market from a UA perspective, from a creative perspective, from an ASO perspective?
Yes. So maybe one thing that is relevant to know for entering a new market is that we are physically in all the locations where we operate. So the first step for our company is always building the local team, building the operational side. We can't do any UA. We can't get any users if we don't have restaurants, if we don't have couriers. So those are the main focus for a new market in the beginning. But then once we have kind of the basic setup, we have the core team in place locally, then we start to look into what is the actual launch date for users. And then when it comes to UA, over there, often we try to if we have launched any similar markets, we probably try to get some sort of learnings from there. I think overall the main strategy that we have is to not start from the assumption that, okay, we need to build a brand and be really, top of funnel, make sure that people know who we are, but we actually approach it more from the perspective of starting with a tactical angle. Let's see if we can already get users in with UA, which actually often works. And then only if that's not possible or there's something broken in the funnel, do we start going upper in the funnel and starting to fix those different areas. So that's the main approach for UA. When it comes to the localizations, the main responsibility there is we have our own brand team who's producing the assets. And then in the local markets, we always have a marketing manager who's then responsible for the localization. So basically, they work together to make sure that everything is localized in a way that we want. So we don't localize with an agency or anything like that, but it's super important for us to be local, not only in the language, but also with the feel and kind of what sort of brand we want to build in that market.
Yeah, and I want to talk a bit more about that. But before, I just you talked about brand, and it's a really interesting case because Wolt has this kind of a network effect that is extremely powerful. Like when you get into a market, and again, I'm talking from the perspective of a user, the first thing that I saw was a delivery person with a Wolt box on the bike. And you start seeing more and more and more of these people. Everybody started asking, what is this? What is Wolt? We didn't know the brand. The next thing that happened is a friend of mine texted me, hey, if you download this app, you get 30 shekels. That's the currency here in Israel, but 30 shekels in credit if you buy something. So there was also this invite loop that was working. And I really like this approach of first of all, seeding it with UA. And once you have a critical mass or core, community of people or group of people that are using Wolt, it starts to expand itself through, first of all, the physical placement of all the Wolt delivery person. I mean, when you now go to the street in Tel Aviv, you see dozens and dozens of those every every second, and with user invites. So I think that also probably makes UA easier afterwards, because people start recognizing the brand naturally. So I really like that approach.
No, I think also at the core of all of that is the product, which has like from the beginning been the main focus of the company, and still is. Like, if you don't have a good product, it doesn't matter what you do with UA. But if you have a good product, you can just drop people in there, and they will have a good experience. They will, as you said, like, they will keep inviting other people. They will keep coming back. So that's something that, like, you can't do without. You can add as many layers as you want on top, but you have to have a good product.
Yeah, well, 100%. Like, the one of your competitors here in Israel, which is a very, I don't know, I think this company has been around for like a decade maybe, and it existed. Nobody used it because it's a horrible product and a horrible experience. I won't say the name of the competitor so they won't be mad at me, but it's just a horrible experience. You're like, you have no idea. They're always late. You have no idea where the delivery person is. They don't really work with the restaurants that you want to order from. And when you use Wolt, it was so much. It was like more than 10 times better. Then people started talking about it. So I really agree. And I just want to, I think one takeaway here is that having a great product and having all these kind of loops, like the user invites and the brand that starts to pick up organically in a new market for you, it really makes UA, way more efficient. And if you don't have these pieces, it doesn't matter how well you, set up your campaigns and create ad creatives that are really good, the product won't grow at the end of the day. So I want to go back into the assets and you said taking learnings from like new markets. What do you do when you enter a market, let's say like Japan, which is like very, very different, I think, from the markets that you were serving before? How do you approach like studying or learning? What kind of messages and creatives even would work for this audience? Because everything is very different.
Yeah, so I think we have maybe two angles. So as I said, we have the local team. So we have a nice way to get local insight. We work really closely with the local marketing team in all countries. And they know their market, obviously. So we can get certain insights from there. Of what they have seen to work, like what's the culture, and that sort of things. And then also we still want to not go with the assumption that something that worked elsewhere would not work. So we always want to go with this approach of having something very local and then something that is more central, looking more like the generic creatives that we have, and testing a mix of these two. Then from there we can already see usually some directions of what starts to work, and we can start kind of going more towards that.
How do you approach testing, by the way? I mean, for product pages, you've been using StoreMaven to A/B test, but how do you approach testing ad creatives?
So often we also have to do this on a country by country basis. We've tried to run or do testing on a global level, but how it always ends up is that there's kind of no correlation between the different countries from test to test. So it's really hard to build kind of paths like, okay, this type of thing works in this group of markets or something like that. We still do that in some cases when it comes to, for example, what sort of formats do we want to be producing, and things like this kind of prioritization on the central brand production side. But then when it comes to more details in the creatives, yeah, it's always up to the campaign manager of that market. So everyone in our team who's managing campaigns, they usually have two markets that they take care of. They take care of all channels and both UA and retargeting. So they have kind of this full overview of the market, of what works. They have the freedom to allocate budget wherever it works the best. How can we grow as fast as possible? So then they are also, of course, the best people to do this sort of testing.
Cool. And do they work? How do they work with the ASO function? I mean, do they work with, they have an ASO partner, which is a different person in the team that you work with on like localizing the product page?
Yes. So when it comes to localizing the product page, usually, so we have certain people who do also ASO. And then these people usually are the ones kind of, first of all, to pick the countries where that we want to prioritize. Of course, it's there. If it's a new market, we want to localize that for sure. And then when it comes to testing in existing markets, we have certain rules how we prioritize them. So usually then it's this person approaching the local marketing team, and then also depending on the case, the UA manager for that market for insights to kind of collect initial ideas for testing.
Cool. And do you have any cool examples for like things that you learned or that surprised you with results of tests of like what kind of messaging worked in different countries? I mean, I guess that the different foods that people like in different countries is a big part of it, but do you see anything surprising?
Yeah, I would say like there's burgers do work. That's one learning. It's not surprising. Yeah. That's kind of new. Most likely can apply to every market. But then, of course, there are also some really specific things that work. And it's, I think it has also been fun to see, like, over the years, like, the different, like, getting to know the different cuisines. I think, for example, Georgian food. Now, since I've been there, it's really good. It's
amazing.
One of the best cuisines I've tasted. But it doesn't really look that, like, appetizing or
appealing.
I don't know.
Yeah, but
visually
it's
appealing because it's often like a mush of different things, like vegetables and some sauce and something. So it's just like a lump. If you don't know what it is, then it looks a bit weird, but it does work really well. So that's, for example, one thing that I was like, before I knew what the food actually is and what it tastes like, it just looks like, okay, I have no idea what this is, but it works really well.
Wow. And creative wise, like you're like, I'm going back to Japan that has a extremely different, standard in what, like, how do people design ads? Like the ads in Japan are crazy to me. Like when I traveled in Japan, I looked at these ads and I said, wow, this is so different and so crazy with like, from so many reasons. So in your creatives in Japan, ads and in the product page, it's like it looks very different than how it looks in the West. Like what did you learn there?
So I think there we are trying to find the balance of what our identity is as a like Finnish or Nordic brand, because that's also something that's considered to be very positive in Japan. So we don't want to lose that. But then also, of course, we also want to conform to the like what the local kind of visual aesthetic is. So we are constantly testing with that balance. And I think now, for example, trying to go a bit crazier and see what has. I think it's kind of always trying to balance between these two and how to, because it's a good differentiator also for us to maintain a little bit of that Nordic clean looking thing. But then, of course, it's the complete opposite of the basic Japanese ad style. So yeah, it's been very interesting. And I think there's still a lot for us to learn there.
Awesome. Yeah, you're definitely teaching the world what is the benefits of having clean and Nordic UI and design. It's really cool. Do you have any like 2-3 tips for somebody that is thinking about localization of an app and starting to enter into new markets, like 3 like learnings that you have that they must take into account when thinking about localization?
I would say the first one is to, like, if you in any way have the possibility, have someone local to look at your content. Make sure, like, it can even be like if you're using a translation agency or whatever it is, then having like one piece of something that is produced by them checked by a local, just to get an understanding of what vibe do you have, like what feeling and style does the copy have and the visual, because there's a lot to do there, and you have to somehow make sure that you're conveying what you want to convey, not only with words, but also with what's behind them. So I'd say that would be one. Then not to make assumptions. As I said, it could be something completely different from what you're doing that works, but it could also be that the same exact thing that you did in some other market works. So not kind of ditching either angle, but testing both and finding kind of what's the ideal in between.
Awesome. Thank you. That's really valuable. So we are running a bit out of time, but I want to ask you a few questions we ask all guests. So first of all, if you could give like a tip to somebody that wants to go into mobile growth marketing or user acquisition, what would it be?
I think my main tip would be learn to look at a lot of numbers. And not only the UA numbers, but try to get an understanding of businesses. Like, that's what's going to get you further than just managing a campaign and looking at how that campaign is doing, but actually understanding how does that affect the company, what can you maybe do in what you're doing with the UA side to really have a bigger impact in the company, to be more efficient, something like that. I think it requires a lot of understanding of other business metrics as well than only the UA.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I learned that the more you can tie the work that you're doing to revenues at the end of the day, that is interesting to leadership and the C-level of the company, the better you are. Like, you just have to find how the things that you're doing now are affecting revenues.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the same applies also in other teams. For some other team, it might not be revenue. If it's product team, it might be something else. So kind of also understanding what's the priority for each, and that makes you better in collaborating and prioritizing things with different teams.
For sure. And for content recommendation, do you have a certain person that you follow, or a newsletter, or something that you read that you would recommend fellow UA folks to read?
I'd say, like, my main source for things to read is actually LinkedIn. So I just follow certain hashtags there, for example. And then I think now over time, I've been able to train the algorithm to show me quite a lot of stuff that I want to look at. So finding some relevant keywords, it could be just like UA performance marketing or something like that, or if it's like a specific industry, for example, startups, anything like that, and then slowly trying to train the algorithm to find content that you look at. But I think for me, that has been like a good way to actually find things that I probably myself wouldn't search for.
Cool. Yeah, I think LinkedIn is becoming more of like a place where you can train the algorithm to consume the kind of content that you want, and it's been working great. And because the name of the podcast is Mobile Growth and Pancakes, and because yesterday I ordered a pancake on Walt, I want to ask you, what's your favorite flavor of pancake?
I would say like plain pancake and then banana and whipped cream on top. Nothing else. That's like the perfect.
Nice.
Perfect way to do it.
It's almost the pancake I ordered yesterday, but it had blueberries as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
yeah, blueberries. I think that's a good addition too. Like, wouldn't mind blueberries. But if I had to only pick one, then I would leave those out.
Cool. And if anyone wants to chat with you, ask you anything about work, life, anything, where they can find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn with my name, which might be hard to spell, but it's Veera Alakaila. I don't know if it will be in some description of
we'll
of
write
this
it.
Episode.
Yeah.
But also if you search for user acquisition and Bolt, you probably will find me.
Awesome. Cool. So thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And I'll talk to you soon. I'm off to order some lunch from Bolt.
Great. Have a good lunch.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was Mobile Growth and Pancakes. To find out more about StoreMaven and how we can improve App Store performance, visit storemaven.com. And then make sure to search for Mobile Growth and Pancakes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at StoreMaven, thanks for listening.